Welcome to the Changing Churches Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Couch, pastor of Christ United Methodist Church in Mobile, Alabama. This podcast is for transformational church leaders who want to lead change in their congregations. This season, we're talking to church leaders from all around the country about church staffing, one of the most challenging aspects of leading a church. Get ready to hear some great wisdom to help you bring needed change to your church. Well, hello and welcome to the Changing Churches Podcast. I'm Rob Couch, and I am so thrilled today to be joined by Pastor Roy Hill, who is the pastor of discipleship at Dayspring Baptist Church, which is a church just down the street from the church where I serve at Christ United Methodist Church. And we serve here together in the Mobile, Alabama area. And Roy and I have actually known each other for a long time. We both served in the Saraland, Satsuma area, and he was the pastor at First Baptist Satsuma, which was the big church in the area. We were always trying to be more like him. And but in the last
that gets you in trouble.
Well, in the last few years, we've really gotten to be really good friends and really close through our work through the Pledge Group, which is a racial reconciliation group. And I'm actually, Roy, at the end of this, don't let me forget, I want to get you to talk about that. I want to share a little bit about that because that's really, we love church, but that's kind of our passion, isn't it, to do that for the church. And Roy is serving currently at Dayspring. And so, Roy, just give everybody a little bit of taste of what Dayspring is like, kind of the kind of church it is, you know, what is it like, so people kind of get a sense of where you're speaking from.
Okay, sure. Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to be here with you. It's good when friends can sit together and have these kind of conversations. Dayspring, as you said, is located just down the street from Christ United. Dayspring is, I think, 23 years old. And Dayspring folks, please forgive me if I got that number wrong. I'm thinking 23.
That should be tattooed on your arm, except you'd have to change it every year, right?
Right. You have to constantly update. Or we just put the date it was formed on there. Mm-hmm. But Dayspring is a strong, healthy church, in my opinion, that is fortunate to be able to have a number of different age groups involved in the church. So many churches have a strong young adult area or a strong median adult or strong senior adult. And I feel like we've got some strength in each of those areas. God has really given us a neat opportunity to be a part of His work by giving us that kind of diversity. We also have some racial diversity in our church, which again is something that you and I definitely feel a calling to speak to as the Lord gives us opportunity. I've been at Dayspring for just over 2 years. We have a unique leadership team at Dayspring, and we are all considered a part of that team as pastoral staff members. But we have three lead pastors, and I mention that because people always seem curious about it. We have a lead pastor of operations that is the person that dots every I and crosses every T, and he is another good friend of you and I both. And we have a lead pastor of ministries who is over the ministry focus and vision and also deals with our missions emphasis as well. We're really committed to missions across the country and around the world. And then we have a lead pastor of teaching who is that vision caster, preacher, teacher that does an incredible job. And each of them are uniquely gifted in their areas and they just carry equal responsibility, and they have a tremendous amount of trust and you know, just a connection between them that is what I think makes it work well. So that's a little bit about Dayspring. I mean, I could go on a lot longer than that, but I'm not going to do that.
Just so you mean, Dayspring is an outstanding church, and I first became familiar with Dayspring when I was here before as an associate pastor.
Okay.
And so I've kind of gotten to see it from about the time that it started until where it is now. And I don't remember exactly how many years that is either, but it is an outstanding church. And I'm just grateful. And I do have lots of friends that either go there or know folks who are connected. But of course, certainly the pastors there is the pastors and staff that I know, there's awesome, awesome people. And I do, I'm really kind of curious a little bit about that because we are, this season, of course, is talking about staffing.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the triumvirate that you have there. And I've always found that fascinating because, you know, United Methodist churches, we tend to be, I don't know, I actually know of one church that attempted that sort of thing, but it wasn't done the way that it was y'all are doing it. And so just kind of tell me, how does that work to be led by three pastors, each of which have their own kind of role or I guess that's a way to say it.
That's a great question. To be honest with you, the first time I heard about it was before I had any kind of formal connection with Dayspring. And I was skeptical the first time I heard about it. I thought to myself, there's no way that works well. And so I began to just kind of watch and listen and ask those kind of questions like what you just asked. And the more I saw what was happening there, the more I just became engaged with how is this working so well? It takes a great amount of self-confidence, but it also takes a great amount of humility. I would say that our three lead pastors each have that in common. And each of these guys, I can talk about them individually, and they are each unique individuals. And you're going to love each one of them for who they are. But they just commit to communicate with one another, and they talk through things together. They have a scheduled meeting time, but you see the three of them communicating constantly. And, there are times where you may see one of them sitting in the parking lot in their vehicle on the phone, and then you walk past another one's office. And we have glass doors so that you can see into every office in our office complex there. You walk by, another office, and you see that LP on a phone, and okay, they're still working some stuff out before this one even comes in the office. So they trust one another. They are very open and honest with one another, and again, that comes to a sense of self confidence. But they also have great humility with one another because they listen. We see this play out even in our staff meetings where, all of the ministerial staff are sitting there together, and you'll see the three of them just kind of feed off of one another. And, you can ask one of them a question, and it's not unusual for them to say, well, this is what I think, but really that would be a better question for the lead pastor of ministries or the lead pastor of teaching or the lead pastor of operations. So, again, they are committed to making it work. And Rob, it works. I've had to back up several times and go, hey, you know what? That worked better than I thought it would originally. It's amazing to watch, but it's because, as you lead this conversation, I'm gonna follow your leadership here. But, if we talk about staffing from the perspective of team or anything like that, they make it work as a team.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I even know, there's even been some transition in that team since I've been here.
There has.
And I think sometimes people go, well, it worked with just those personalities. It can only work with them. It's very unique. But and I'm sure they had to work it all out. But, there's even been a transition in the teaching pastor position, in the last several years. I can't remember how long ago it was, but they made that transition well, and everybody just embraced the new teaching pastor. I think was elevated from the staff, from what I understand. Right. So, it's a great. I think about the there's a church leader that I love very much named Alan Hirsch. He does the missional church stuff, but he talks about every church needs an apostle, the APEST. Or APEPT, depending on how you do it, be apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, teacher, Shepherd, I think I'm losing my acronym there, but that we really need all of those things. And what we typically do in churches is with a pastor, that pastor has to be the apostle, the prophet, the evangelist, the shepherd, and right. the teacher. He's got to do it all. He or she, in our tradition, he or she has got to do it all. And and really, you know, the Lord gives those gifts out in different people. So I think it's a really cool biblical model, and it's a example of how it's actually being done successfully in a great church.
Yeah, and it is successful. I tell our lead pastor of operations often, because he's the one that, again, keeps all the records and stuff. And I said, man, somebody has to be taking notes on all this, because the more people hear about it, they're going to want to understand how it works.
Right.
And, you know, you want to be able to give them accurate, trustworthy information. So, it's a unique setup.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's different from what you would expect in most churches, but they have definitely made it work, and their gifts are being played out so well in their areas.
Yeah,
so
that's incredible. That's great. That. Well, in addition to being on a large church staff, and I mentioned earlier that Roy was the senior pastor of First Baptist Satsuma and has served other churches as well.
Right.
And so he's also been the head of a staff as well. And so part of in kind of asking some of the questions I want to talk to you about today, you know, feel free to draw on any of that experience that you got, both where you are now, as well as because, you know, you've been dealing with it. And I don't know about you, and but in my seminary training and all, they spent about 0 days talking about how to lead a staff. I don't know if it's just the Methodists that did that poorly, or if the Baptists maybe could improve.
We're equally poor in that area.
And I mean, I don't know, probably the majority of churches in the country, maybe they don't have a huge staff or don't have to worry about those kinds of things. But the truth is, every pastor, I mean, think about what a staff is. I love that. You know, we use that word, and everybody knows what a staff is, but a staff is what a shepherd holds, right? And that's why a pastor has a staff. And so no matter if you're serving a church of 1,000 or you're serving a church of 100 or even 10, there are people who are part of your staff who are helping you do the work of shepherding ministry. And I feel like I was not equipped through seminary in how to do this. And most of it's been on-the-job training.
Yeah. And that is absolutely true. If you go back and study Baptist history in America, we learned a lot from the Methodist. You guys helped us a lot. And this may be one of the things that we learned from y'all. We don't need to deal with how to handle a staff. I don't know. Let me comment, though, that as a student again, somewhat later in life than I anticipated being a student again, but as a student again at one of our seminaries, I am seeing them correct this problem. Mm-hmm. I am seeing them begin to deal with this and that administrative aspect of leading a church that so many of us were not prepared for. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
But no, we had no formal training.
Yeah,
in our preparation in years gone by.
Yeah, so. And so Roy right now is in the middle of a doctoral program. I think he said he has two more seminars to go, and then I guess you got a little paper to write along with that. So
a little bit of paperwork is going to follow that. Yeah. So, but I'm starting to at least feel a little bit of breeze from the end of the tunnel. I hadn't seen that light yet.
That's right.
But I feel like it's just right around the corner.
That's good. So. Well, kind of, if we think about staffing, like we're covering this season on Changing Churches podcast, what would you say maybe throughout your years of ministry has been one of your greatest challenges in this area of staffing?
Having the insight that I needed when looking for new staff, new positions, sometimes my own shortcomings would come out. I would get anxious and not do as much due diligence as I should have in looking at the staff that that I was bringing in. Some of the greatest blessings I've had as a lead pastor have revolved around the staff that I was working with. Man, I can go back and some of those made me so much better than I was without them. And I still stay connected to some of those staff today. And I'm so grateful for the impact that they brought to the table. But then you know, the flip side of that is that there were issues along the way at times as well. Several years ago, just as a, I guess now a lifelong student, realizing that I've got so much more to learn, I began to seek some counsel, some just insight from the people that are smarter than I am. And it became so interesting to me that as I talked with them, I talked with a pastor of a healthy, growing church and asked him, what's one of the biggest struggles that you have as the pastor of a healthy, growing church? And he said, that's easy, staff. Okay. I talked to a successful businessman that by every standard of success from any kind of worldly perspective, he had it made. He also is a strong believer, and I thank God for that. And he was faithful with what God had given him. I asked him one day, though, as a businessman, what's the toughest thing you have to deal with? Is it making decisions or having meetings or keeping customers? What's the toughest thing you have to deal with? Because he's a leader. And he said, oh, that's easy. The employees. Okay. So I wound up having this same conversation with two more people, a total of four people that I feel like were at the peak level in their respective fields, two in ministry, two in secular work. And I got the same answer from all four of them. This is a critical, critical issue. And, you know, there's been times, Rob, where I've been working with people that there became a sense of conflict or angst, if you will. And we came to realize this person is incredibly gifted. They love Jesus. They want to serve. They're called to ministry. But so many times we can put the right people in the wrong place.
That's right.
And so, again, we have to just not get anxious. And that's back to your question. I'm sorry for chasing that rabbit. But we have to not get anxious. Take your time, because the people we're going to surround ourselves with in ministry are going to define us. And they're going to make us better, or they're going to bring out the worst in us. You know, again, and I'm sorry for referencing back to Dayspring again, but the team concept that we're following at Dayspring is absolutely fantastic. It's a healthy work environment, because we are learning every day opportunities to are finding opportunities to rely on one another. And we have team meetings that then come together as the staff meeting, and everyone bring something to the table that's valuable. So, you know, understand people's strengths and understand your own weaknesses and be humble enough to say, I need help, or I made a wrong decision. And I have found, and this is, you can just put Roy Hill next to this and blame me if this doesn't sound right. I have found that the worst decisions I've made as far as dealing with staffing were when I didn't follow the instinct that I feel like was the Holy Spirit trying to nudge me. And I didn't want to do it because sometimes it was just hard. And I wanted to find an easier way. And it never worked out the way I thought it was going to.
So it sounds like, I mean, you have faced the same challenges that I'm facing in ministry as well. And so how do you, you know, you're talking about trying to find the right people and put them in the right places. How do you typically approach trying to find the right people? I mean, like, what are you looking for? Where do you look? All of those kinds of things, so that, you know, there are a lot of people out there listening right now that are going, I need a this, or I need a that, or I think I need a this, and I think I need a that type of position. And they don't even really know where to look or who to look for or what kinds of things to look for.
Let me give you a quick example. I come from a very, very, very musical family. Me, not so much. I have no musical talent. I am the least qualified person to go out and pick just the right person to be a worship leader or a choir director, if you have a choir. And so again, you know, we have to figure out First of all, what kind of personality, what kind of team member we're looking for. But then we have to humbly ask people that are better qualified than us to help find them. Hey, who do you know? Who do you recommend in this area? For me, the go-to statement every time I would be looking for a new staff member or, you know, even at DaySpring, as we from time to time may have to, and our staff does tend to want to stay.
Yeah.
But as we from time to time may have to fill a staff need, the two things that I look for more than anything else, if we can assume the call of God on their life, is attitude and spouse. Because those have been areas of great, great anxiety and conflict in the past, is that somebody just have a bad attitude. I had a staff member that just started telling people often around the church that would say something to them about, hey, that's not my job. Well, that's an unacceptable answer for me. So do they have the right attitude? Because we can teach what their responsibilities would be. And then you want to make sure that they have a spouse. If you're bringing in a female, you want to make sure that they've got a husband that's going to be supportive of them, because there are times where, you know, you don't clock out every day at 4:30. There are times where you may have to be there late at night on a weekend, and you may get a call in the middle of the night and wind up being up half the night talking to someone. You want a spouse that at least understands that sense of call. I've been blessed with that in my own life. So I look for the right attitude and a spouse that understands what being in ministry is going to look like. But then I've learned to go ask people that are smarter than I am, hey, who do you recommend in this position? If we were looking for a student pastor, you know, go ask some of the good student pastors that you know. Who do you think would be great in this situation? So yeah, seek counsel. And again, let's hopefully, and we can't, but hopefully we can assume that call of God in their life, but then get the right attitude and get somebody with a spouse that's gonna
I know that if you have a family that is not supportive of you know, what's happening there, because it is, especially if you're bringing somebody in from, because I would say that in some ways it's not, some churches assume, you know, you probably, I have a feeling this is not just a Methodist thing, but, you know, the pastor is appointed, you know, in our system, we are appointed, pastors appointed, and the joke used to be, does their wife play piano? Because the in our, you know, of course, in our system, we have men and women pastors, and but typically when it's a male pastor, the question is, does their wife sing? Does she play the piano? And I know that sometimes churches have the erroneous understanding that they've hired the pastor and they get like this bonus staff member that works for free, you know, and that's not very fair. But at the same time, I hear what you're saying, that if you have a person that's, if you have a family that's not supportive of you, even let's say it's a single person, mom and dad that aren't supportive of that, I mean, they're going to have a current working against them. And so that makes a lot of sense.
I know three people that have left ministry because they said their marriage, their spouse couldn't support it. Years ago, a pastor that I think the world of even today, attempted suicide because he could not imagine not doing what he felt like God had called him to do, but he knew he couldn't continue to do it without the support of his spouse.
Because it was what it was doing to their marriage or what they were doing to their family.
It was tearing them apart. This is so serious. And, you know, so many times we assume people on staff have everything together and everything's going great. And, you know, they don't have the problems that, you know, people sitting in the pew may think that, you know, they have. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And they have some of those same struggles. And we need to be sensitive to that.
And I think one of the things about ministry that anybody listening to this probably already knows, that if you have any kind of challenge in your life, you know, spiritual challenge, emotional challenge, personal challenge, relationship challenge, The crucible of ministry doesn't usually make it better, right? I mean, it really, it tests it, and it is it's a crucible. And so, it's one of those things where, you know, hopefully we have supportive families, we have supportive friends, you know, everybody has a good network. Cause I think in ministry, having a great network is so important to be able to have that support, even friends.
Yes.
Yeah. Even friends. I think a lot of pastors don't have any friends, which is just sad, you know, and,
That is very sad.
Yeah, it is. But it's easy to get out there on an island in the middle of this and feel like you're all alone, and maybe even that you're not. You're the only one dealing with this, and of course you're not. You know, people can reach out and find somebody to reach out to.
Well, they feel like they have to give the illusion of being perfect or having it all figured out, and that's how they wind up feeling so alone. Is because they don't feel like they can find somebody they can just be themselves with.
Right. Right.
So,
Well, so tell me, is there a secret place where Southern Baptists find great staff members? I mean, is there like a hole somewhere that y'all can just go and find them and they're hidden there somewhere? Or is it a seminary? Is it the former church? Is it, you know, how does that work?
There is a secret place, but you didn't give me the secret handshake when I walked in. I'm not at liberty to tell you, you know, maybe later. No, there's not a secret place. I feel like we struggle with the exact same things that the Methodist and any other denomination struggle with, and that is finding the the right people to put in leadership within the body of believers. And you know, Southern Baptist have had some real shortcomings in that area that have been newsworthy in recent years. And, you know, Lord help us to be better. Yeah. Lord help us to be the men and women God's called us to be in the work. Seminaries are a great resource. There are a number of churches that would tell you that the first thing they want to know if they're looking for someone as a pastor, as a pastoral staff member, as a lead pastor, do they have a seminary degree? And, you know, that is an important question. I am a fan of the seminaries, but there are also plenty of people that have been called by God and are trying to respond to that call as faithfully as they can that haven't been through seminary. So, you know, don't just limit it. But that is a question that comes up a lot. I've had professors at seminary tell me, If you're ever looking for a place, give me your resume. I have people call me 3 or 4 times a day. Hey, who do you got at seminary that's available? Yeah. So that is a big go-to source. But, you know, we live in a world now where everything is so easily, I guess, discovered. You can you can find anybody anywhere. Communication is readily available at almost any level. And so now we find a lot of people that are just making those phone calls to somebody that they know or met one time and are able to reach out and connect to them immediately. And, you know, that's happening right now as well.
Wow.
So
I have a question. I just thought about it. This is not in my normal battery of questions. Okay. And so, but I had at one time, and this was years ago, someone told me that there was a tradition in some Baptist churches that when the new pastor comes on board, and this may be a large church or something like that, that it's customary that all of the staff that are there basically hand in their letter of resignation and give the, almost like a football coach does, you know, you hand in your letter of resignation, and then the incoming pastor who's been called by the church then basically gets a chance to either retain or say, thank you for that letter. And oftentimes that pastor has maybe a staff member they worked with before that they want to bring with them, or maybe someone they worked at another church. And is that, A, was that ever true? And B, is that still kind of happening today? And I've just always, some days Methodist pastors dream of that. Not me ever, but no, some pastors dream that this might be something that exists. But I also know that that's probably a very treacherous, if that's true, would be very treacherous.
Yeah. And, It is very treacherous. Thank you for choosing your question wisely, because you use the word tradition. Uh-huh. And that has been a tradition at times in some Baptist churches. More so in the past, but it's not unheard of that mm-hmm. that might still happen from time to time. In most cases, in my experience, and I guess I've been in ministry and been in Southern Baptist life long enough now that I at least know how to do it wrong. I've learned some of the mistakes that myself definitely included, have made. But you're right, that is a very treacherous, slippery slope to get on. But it's not unusual for pastors to want to bring in people that they already know mm-hmm. and are comfortable mm-hmm. with. And each church, because we as Southern Baptists can't speak from one office somewhere, mm-hmm. and you and I both have a dear friend that is serving as president of the Southern Baptist Convention, mm-hmm. but he doesn't speak from one office.
That's right.
As a declaration to all Southern Baptists, right, this is right. what we're going to do. Yeah. The church, the local mm-hmm. body of believers, is the decision maker mm-hmm. for itself. Each church is autonomous. So there are some churches that have created that as a policy, mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. if there's a new pastor coming in, all staff members would hand in their resignations mm-hmm. before that pastor gets here, and then he would decide whether or not, or that new pastor would have mm-hmm. to decide whether or not he was going to accept them.
Yeah.
We are seeing it less, and yeah. I'm glad of that.
Yeah. So in our tradition, one time, this was when I was in Saraland, I had some meeting with lots of different church members, and the church had had in Methodist churches, especially smaller Methodist churches, have a pretty quick turnover of pastors, and they were telling me about one time a pastor came in and people didn't like him, and they said to me, "I don't know why they left the church. I mean, all you have to do is wait around; he'll be gone.
Yeah,
be gone anytime. Now, why even yeah. worry about it? You know, and." And I think there's an expectation within our tradition that the pastor comes in and that I must adapt
yeah.
to the staff, and I must adapt to the people, and I must. And of course, that's true anywhere. Yeah, I mean, sure. there's a level of adaptation, but it is. I've often wondered about that, because I thought, there are times when you come in and the staff members that are there are yeah. ready for a new leadership. They're ready for that, but sometimes. Yeah. there's a new Pharaoh who knew not Joseph, right? And
yeah.
And so they're kind of like, and it can be difficult for that transition to happen. And usually it's all civil and people can work through it at
sure.
all. But sometimes it's nice for a pastor to eventually have people that they brought on, they hired.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's a little bit of a difference when you're leading a church, or when you hire staff, there's a difference between an inherited staff
yeah.
and a hired staff. And that
you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the realities is that when a pastor leaves and there were staff members there, mm-hmm. one of those staff members may very well have been dreaming of being the next pastor.
Yeah.
And so at that point, there could become some level of conflict when a new pastor comes in, because there's somebody there that wanted the position that God's now put this new pastor in. So that then begins to affect that trust level of competition. There is undermining mm-hmm. that goes mm-hmm. on in church staffs that, make us look entirely too much like the competitive spirit of the world. Mm-hmm. I can understand and I get the fact that pastors do want people around them that they can trust.
Right.
That
right.
they do know, that this person is also gifted in the area they're going to be serving
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, patience can often win the day if we'll just we'll take time. God may have somebody there in place for us that we never anticipated.
That's right. That's right.
Turns out to be our best friend.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to the humility that you mentioned about that you've seen in
yeah.
the three lead pastors at Dayspring and
yeah.
how they've been able to do that. And even undergoing some transition there where people have new people have stepped into that leadership and right. still, you know, I'm sure there's some growing pains in that, but the fact that they were able to do that, but it takes humility to be able to do something like that.
It does. And isn't that the spirit that God called us to have in the first place?
I've heard that. I feel like I read that somewhere one time.
It was just somebody wrote that down and need to write it down, on every desk for us. But yeah. And it's, I hate to use this terminology because we're being recorded, but I've used it when I wasn't being recorded. Pastors can be some of the most pridefully insecure people. Mm-hmm. And, I hope that you will receive the compliment. Mm-hmm. You are not that. Mm-hmm. You make the people around you feel like they're the most important people in the world. Mm-hmm. God's gifted you in that area. Mm-hmm. But that comes from a spirit of, again, there's a self-confidence that mm-hmm. you have mm-hmm. that makes humility come easier. Mm-hmm. You're not having to flex mm-hmm. to make an impression on people. So pastors have battled that issue of pride mm-hmm. and that issue of insecurity, mm-hmm. Which leads to distrust or mm-hmm. comes out of distrust mm-hmm. So often in the past. And so, lead pastor or staff all have to accept, hey, if God calls us to be together here, mm-hmm. how can we do what's best for the kingdom of God mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. anybody ever bothering to remember our names?
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. That's good. Well, I think that goes for pastors, and then I think that's probably what you're looking for in a staff member too. And sure. I love it's such an interesting to say at the same time that humility and self-confidence are sort of in the same vessel. I mean, like yeah. And it's weird that that self-confidence is part of how humility is born.
And I believe
it
that,
almost
yeah.
seems. That didn't seem to go right, but I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, they seem like they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
But, a confident person should be able to exercise humility because mm-hmm. They're not feeling every day like they've got to prove it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. I think sometimes I notice people have heard that humility is important, yeah. and so they're really good at trying to act humble.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, you heard about the guy that won the award for being the most humble guy at the workplace, and then they took the award from him because he hung it up in his office. humility is vital.
Yeah.
And it needs to be, it's got to be genuine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes me think. I mentioned to you about this book, Patrick Lencioni book, and I know you said you want.
Tell me a little bit about it.
I'm actually asking everybody this season. I'm asking them a question that really comes out of the book.
Okay.
The book is The Ideal Team Player, and right. Patrick Lencioni. He's the one. He kind of became famous for his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, and yeah. the book. His books typically have like a little parable at the beginning, yeah. and then at the back of it, kind of gives the meat of what he's trying to teach. And he basically says that the ideal team player on any kind of staff or business or whatever, the person you're looking for to hire is hungry,
yeah.
humble, and smart. And just to qualify what he means by smart, it's not book smarts, but it's really almost like EQ. It's a yeah. people smarts.
Yeah.
And so hungry, humble, and smart. And so I'm curious, and of course I know you've not studied the book or anything like that, so I won't hold you to any answers, but I'm just curious, in that very quick and very reductionist way of explaining that book, if you're looking for a staff member, hungry, humble, smart, humble, hungry, smart, what order might you look, what might you put those in? And remember, smart means people smart, it's not just really, really smart, sharp. Brain, though certainly that's part of it.
Well, let me also respond by saying I will read the book But as you said earlier, I am a seminary student again right now. So
it won't be anytime soon.
I have a reading list now. So that book will go on that reading list and we'll take it from there just as soon as we can get to it. But I don't have to turn a report in on that in the next couple of weeks.
That's so, right.
You know, it'll get pushed back for at least a month or so. Hungry, humble, and smart. Wow. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. The hungry and humble, man, those are going to be so close together as the very first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I guess based on the particular need that we had, mm-hmm. I would have to put hungry or humble as the first one, mm-hmm. just based on each individual need. I would. Can I reserve the right to change them?
I will bring you back on later, and you can give me your new take on it.
Okay.
You know, once you're Dr. Roy, we'll bring Dr. Roy back on, and you can tell us the truth.
I like hungry. I do like people that are driven.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that humble spirit is what. Especially if you're going to be a part of a staff, mm-hmm. if you're going to be on a team,
mm-hmm.
you've got to have that humility to be able to work together. Yeah. And again, that humility, working with other people who are gifted and effective at what they're doing and also are humble enough to listen to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, that humility shared among a healthy team is going to also build mm-hmm. that confidence mm-hmm. as well. It'll, mm-hmm. it'll make it grow even stronger. So, yeah, hungry and humble are going to be neck and neck for me.
Yeah,
I do want people who are people smart.
Yeah, it's really kind of you could keep talking about it, and every once in a while you go, "Well, but you need that."
Yeah.
I don't think he wants us to rank them, to be honest. But I thought it'd just be interesting.
That's a good question, though.
Yeah, what do people think about this? So.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear maybe a little bit of this. May be something the way y'all do it at DaySpring, or it may be the ways you've done it in your ministry times. But what do y'all do to onboard your staff? Like when you hire a new staff member and you get them on board, obviously they got to fill out paperwork. And that's not what I'm talking about. You know, I'm assuming that has to happen. But what are you doing to get that staff member in? Kind of to get, you know, get the culture, to get all of that, get connected to the team and all those things.
Yeah. Well, in the 2+ years that I've been there, we have started that process before they came in to try and get them connected with the team by making sure that at the very minimal, everyone that they are going to be connected with in the area of ministry that they're going to be responsible for is in the conversation and kind of knows what's going on, where we're headed, and has opportunity to respond. They, you know, it doesn't really matter what staff position it may be. If they're going to be connected in some way to that position, they're going to have an opportunity to respond ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their response may very well be and has been in a couple of cases. I don't know that person, but I know you. I trust you. So, mm-hmm. you know, I look forward to meeting them.
Mm-hmm.
So once we get them in, they have heard the word team mm-hmm. 10,000 mm-hmm. times from us before mm-hmm. they ever it came on board. So they come in. They do the paperwork. But they immediately began to sit down as a member of the team. And we do have different teams that mm-hmm. do meet together, then come together every week for the staff meeting. So we make sure that they understand from day one, you're a part of a much bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that really does trickle down from our lead pastors mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you see in them, I'm serving in the area God's called me to, mm-hmm. God's gifted me in, but I'm a part of a team too.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
we don't just use that word.
Right.
We practice it every day, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that word does get mentioned a lot. Mm-hmm. So we start that process before they get there.
Yeah, so even before they come up. So does that look like, is that like even pre-hiring and all of that? And or is it once you know they're coming, you go ahead and start getting them acclimated to that?
Well, because there's 3 lead pastors, mm-hmm. there's going to be a team in that pre-hiring process mm-hmm. anyway. So mm-hmm. they've already had to deal with a minimal of three lead pastor mentalities, if you will. Yeah. So they've already kind of swam upstream for a little ways. And then, for example, if they were on the team I'm a part of, I would have an opportunity to be really involved in that interview process, that screening process, and talk to some other people about them as well. And so I'm going to keep the team that I'm a part of really well informed. Okay, here's kind of where we're at. Here's what we're doing here. There are times, just because you don't want them to get in trouble at the church where they're at, that you don't start throwing out names to everybody.
Right.
But you still can begin to talk about, hey, here's who this is from the aspect of, this is what they bring to the table. This is some of their experience.
Right.
This is some of the things that they feel like they would want to do if they were they were here serving with this staff. So, you know, at some point, everybody that's going to be directly connected with them will have had an opportunity to respond. And we want to get them introduced as quickly as possible. Everybody's not going to be a part of that interview process. That would be chaotic. You know, there's times where I've sat in interview processes and realized I just need to sit here and keep my mouth shut. They got this, but I'm learning as I'm listening. And so,
That's really good. Well, I mean, what are some of the things that you have done in the past and maybe that you do now in DaySpring to help develop the staff, like in their skills and their, and maybe even part of that is building the team and the culture, you know, of the staff or the camaraderie of the staff. What are some things, some strategies to develop those staff members?
Well, we are gifted here in Mobile with some incredible resources outside of just our local church that can help people develop in their areas. And so, you know, we take advantage of those. We as Southern Baptist also have an abundance of resources that are designed to help people excel in their areas if they want to use them. Those resources are available. So we do try to get people to take advantage of those resources. But more importantly, in-house, we have a lot of reviews. We have a lot of question and answers. And to keep that level of communication open and honest, we are intentional about spending a lot of time together. It's not uncommon to find most of the pastoral staff at lunch together, you know, on some days. And, you know, I had to leave a lunch early today because I was so excited about getting here. And it was, but it was me and four other staff, a couple of the lead pastors were sitting in that conversation with us, just sitting there talking about life and sports. If you know any of our lead pastors, we're going to talk about sports. And I think there's a setup. I'm just going to vent here. All three of them are Alabama fans, and I do think that may be a conflict of interest, but because I'm not. You know, we talk about sports. We talk about life. They were asking me about school, and you know, another one who's also buying a house. We were talking to him. But we also have conversations about ministry, where the developing stage is really always an open door, you know, that, hey, this is a learning opportunity. And, you know, so regular reviews, but also really a lot of conversations that just allow opportunity for us to make one another better.
So not only kind of those quarterly or yearly reviews, but also just kind of constantly staying in touch. So that if there's a problem, you can kind of talk about it at that moment.
And it works.
That's great. So, well, so kind of my coup de grace sort of number one question that I'm going to ask everybody. So I'll put you on the spot here. So I would love for you to tell me a story about one of the greatest hires you've ever made. And so, you know, and I just, you know, anyone out there that you've hired before who does not get chosen in this, it's one of the greatest. They're probably all the greatest, but I would just love to hear about a story of one of the greatest hires that you ever made And how did that happen? And what, you don't have to use any names or like that, but yeah.
I'm not going to use any names.
Okay.
I have friends that may hear this that were on staff with me in the past. So there's no way I'm going to use names. Again, put Roy Hill next to this. This is not what I am saying is the right process for everybody. Mm-hmm. But I've never asked for a stack of resumes. Mm-hmm. I've asked for recommendations mm-hmm. based on relationships. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to somebody that knows somebody that can help fill mm-hmm. this need, mm-hmm. meet this need. We had a need at a church where I was serving, mm-hmm. and I had not been there long, and I had people going, "Hey, I got some resumes. Can I send you?" No, if you've got a stack of resumes you want to send me, and this was at a college level, uh-huh. a college professor said, "I've got some resumes I'd like to send you." I said, "No, don't send me resumes. You make a decision. You pick one. Uh-huh. Send it uh-huh. to me." Okay. And he said, "How many resumes do you have?" And I said, "None. I'm not asking for resumes. Uh-huh. I'm asking for people that I know are excellent in their field to mm-hmm. give me some counsel." Well, we had a church event one night. It was a big weekend. And I had a man and his wife come up and introduce themselves to me. They had come down for the event from the Montgomery area. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just told where this took place. And
they had could be Montgomery, Virginia, yeah, Montgomery, that, California.
That's what it was sure. Montgomery, Quebec, I think, actually. But anyway, it came down. And they were serving in ministry up where they were. Mm-hmm. And we just got to talking. And he introduced himself. And as we talked for a little bit, I said, tell me your name one more mm-hmm. time, first and last name. He told me his name again, second mm-hmm. time. And I went, okay, I thought that maybe you were somebody that a friend had called me about yesterday. And I said, you're not. You have one letter difference in your first name, mm-hmm. but you both have the same last name. Mm-hmm. And I said, I just thought it was odd. Thought mm-hmm. maybe it mm-hmm. was you. And he said, no. He said, so one letter difference. He said, what was the first name? And I said the first name. And he goes, oh, that's my son. I didn't know. I didn't know he had offered his name to a church uh-huh, down here. Uh-huh. And I, well, apparently he has. And uh-huh. I went back and made a couple of phone calls the next day. Well, we wound up bringing that guy on staff. And he and I butted heads. Mm-hmm. I've really tried to always be the guy that, even if I'm in a lead pastor role, mm-hmm. you can come in my office and we can shut the door. You can say anything you want mm-hmm. to do to me. Mm-hmm. We can throw stuff at one another mm-hmm. if that's what we need to. But when it's done, let's go get a sandwich together. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. He and I butted heads mm-hmm. a number of times. He was young. Mm-hmm. He was hungry.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he was good at what he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then through all that headbutting, I really, really believe that he and I both made each other better. Mm-hmm. He would make me, he would ask questions, then make me mad because I didn't have the answer.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't have time to answer that right now. And then I'd go pray for an answer. But I hope, and I feel like I did the same thing for him. Mm-hmm. Well, he and I have stayed connected over wow. the years. We still will communicate some, mm-hmm. and we follow each other on social media, and we'll comment mm-hmm. from time to time. And I'm proud of the pastor he is
yeah,
today.
That's awesome.
And you know, I would want to tell you that there are some things I see him do from time to time, and I go, he got that from me. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, Rob, I find myself doing some things from time to time, and I go, I got this from him.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I would yeah. say that's probably my best hire.
Yeah.
Now, I've got some folks that I helped bring on at Dayspring that are off the charts. Mm-hmm. I'd put them up against anybody in their field
yeah. Yeah.
at what they do. But that's been a relationship that's lasted for mm-hmm. many years now. Yeah. And I look back and I treasure that. Yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. And I love that because it sounds like part of what made him so great was not that it's not like he was very good at what he did, but he made you better.
He did.
He did
make me better.
And I think sometimes we get in our mind, if I could just get somebody who would come in and do what I want them to do, that's sort of like our ideal of what a great staff member would be. Yeah. But the reality is, I mean, first of all, they're probably not going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've yet to find anybody that just, once they just do what I want them to do, you know,
yeah.
and because they are who God created them to be. But the best staff that I've ever had are those, and we have a lot of them right here that are helping me be better. And and it goes back to that humility. And I think, you know, that's been kind of a theme that just keeps coming up as we've talked today is just the importance of that. And you paid me a very nice compliment, and I see that in you too.
You're very kind.
I'm so grateful for you. And so I wanted to just, before we sign off, I wanted just for you and I to share, and this probably has nothing to do with staffing really, but
maybe
it does to a degree, Roy and I are part of something called the Pledge Group.
Right.
And I'll get Roy to explain what that is in a minute. And our kind of our cool name is Shrink the Divide. And that really is the name of our annual event. But in many ways, I think it's become, the Pledge Group is what we are. Shrink the Divide is what we do in a lot of ways. And so we're trying to shrink the racial divide here in our community. And the Lord has blessed us in a way. We were blessed by a group in Mississippi that helped us kind of get this vision. And then because of our work, others have started to take in. So one thing that'd be great if somebody hears this, maybe they go, hey, I'd like to do something like that in my community. So Roy, just share with them what the Pledge Group is, and then I'll add anything that I think I want to add, but you're the president of it right now, so you know.
Well, the Pledge Group is a local group of community leaders, servants. They carry a lot of different titles, and there's diversity within that group, both in their roles within the community. There's clearly racial diversity within that group. But the steering team of the Pledge Group is kind of a reflection of what the Pledge Group as a whole is called to be. The Pledge Group started just over 7 years ago as a body of believers, a group of people that just love Jesus, to say we feel like we need to be proactive in helping shrink the divide, helping create racial reconciliation. And we believe that the only guaranteed way to make that work is through the gospel, and that God's called the church to be who does this. So I would say to the community of believers that I hope are listening to this podcast, we all have a role in helping shrink that racial divide. So we are very gospel-centered. There's some incredible organizations in Mobile that I love and support that have said, hey, why doesn't the Pledge Group come and just be a part of what we're doing? Well, what you're doing is driven by some good things, but we are staying focused on the fact that the gospel is what unites us. The gospel is what makes us brothers and sisters. Yeah. And if a person who looks like me, and you've heard us say this a number of times, they look different from me, they don't look like me, they don't vote like me, they don't worship like me, yet they claim a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, then that man or woman is my brother or sister in Christ.
Yeah. That's right.
And I cannot treat them differently based on how they look and still say that I'm being faithful to what God's called
that's
me
right.
to do.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So that's kind of the message of the Pledge Group is that the body of Christ needs to step up and start loving brothers and sisters in Christ, regardless of any other criteria other than they are our brother and sister in Christ. And that message is what God continues to bless. The Pledge Group does have an annual event. We also have some quarterly events. We have small group gatherings that we have seen popping up all over the city, and just continue to encourage them. I know that you'll probably want to say something about that in just a second, because Rob has provided incredible leadership with our small group ministry for the Pledge Group. So anyway, if you want to follow us on social media, and I know I'm getting too wordy here, so let me bring this down, put the landing gear down. You can follow us on social media, Pledge Group, Twitter, Instagram, just, you know, ask us questions. You can communicate with us. You can please tell them a little bit about some of the Bible study videos and lessons we have that, you know, we're just trying to get the people of God talking about this and responding in a Christ-like manner.
Yeah. And something else that, and one of the things I've loved watching with Roy, and one of our members, Robert Brown, Pastor Robert Brown, became very good friends through their connection in the Pledge Group. And out of that friendship and meeting together, and you know, when I tell people all the time that the Pledge Group at its very heart is a every other week miracle that happens in Mobile, Alabama, because every other week a group of people, black and white, pastors, judges, lawyers,
police officers,
Catholic, Baptist, they even let a Methodist in, you know, police officers, you know, and we even have kind of probably a little more tertiary. We have mayors and things like that that are part of our movement. But the steering team gets together every weekend, and we are able to talk around a table about things that probably very few people in America are talking about together.
Hard conversations.
And doing that in a spirit of love. And sometimes people get upset. Some people will get angry. But everybody stays at the table.
Yeah.
And it's really neat. And so it's a miracle every time. And it's just an incredible thing to be a part of. It's men and women. It's different denominations. You know, it's all Christ-centered. So it's all Christians. And I've had that occasionally. I have somebody say, well, you know, can we broaden this out a little bit? So, you know, other things that are happening in racial reconciliation are important and needed. There's systemic racism. There's all kinds of things that need to be dealt with. But part of our involvement is we have a conviction that this is a part of the body that's wrong. You know, the body of Christ, the church has been wrong about this over the years, many times, and in many places we're still wrong about it. And we need to grow in that. And I've learned so much from everybody. And I lead Shrink the formation of Shrink the Divide groups. And we just get these groups of people together and we send them off to have lunch together.
Right.
And they have lunch every month. And then our goal for them is, and sometimes we give them things to talk about that kind of puts them make them a little bit uncomfortable to talk about some things they maybe normally wouldn't talk about. But then we push them a little bit, but eventually they just become friends. And the next thing you know, they're having a barbecue at their house and they're, inviting them to their daughter's wedding, you know, their friends in there. And what we found, especially in our community, is that we have some bubbles, some black and white bubbles, and people can live their whole lives and never get out of that bubble. And so one of our convictions is let's have those places where people can come together. And we realize that what unites us is far greater and really bigger than what we thought divided us. And so, and we, of course, the greatest thing of that is Jesus Christ is the center of that. So it's really, you know, such an honor to be a part of that. I'm grateful for Roy, his leadership in that. And I'm grateful for Charlotte Green, Reverend Charlotte Green, who's our vice president and another, and I'm going to get her on this podcast at some point when I find something she wants to talk about. And I may just let her pray, and you know,
I think say turn her loose.
Yeah, just turn her loose. Yeah, she'll give us a good word. Well, Roy, thank you so much for joining us and
I've loved it. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah,
thank
and I you. Appreciate you. And I want to thank everybody for listening to the Changing Churches podcast. And I would just encourage you to subscribe to this podcast, to share it with friends, let other people know about it. Each season we'll be covering a different topic that I think will be helpful to pastors all around the United States, and maybe even beyond that. And we want to share this with others so that you can become a better leader, a transformational leader in your church. And these kind of conversations for transformation, I believe, will bring the kind of change that the Lord wants in our churches. Thanks for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Changing Churches podcast. Join us next week as we continue learning about church staffing. To find more, go to changingchurches.net or email me at changingchurches@gmail.com. please subscribe, rate, and share the podcast to help others find us.